All we need is a little understanding. Walk a mile in their shoes. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride called life. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride. This wild ride called life.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the True Sweetheart Podcast. I'm really honored to have Perry Power on today. I actually was, I don't want to say stalking, because I know the person that he co-runs a charity with, but then I saw his story and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. And I commented and said, I would love to have you on the podcast. And he said, let's do it. So thank you so much for being here. His story is remarkable. You are going to hear from him. He's an actor. He's a writer. He's a sexual abuse survivor. So that right there just touches my whole soul, because I am a survivor myself, and I know plenty of people that are. It's very sad, but it's true. But I think we need to have that conversation. And so I want him to discuss that, and then about how he co-runs a charity called We Rescue Kids. And that in itself is amazing, because our mutual friend Juliet, she talks about it all the time, and it just pulls my heartstrings every single post that she makes. So Perry, thank you so much for being here from the UK and for taking the time to talk to us about you and your story.
Oh, it's an honor to be on here sharing this with you. So the pleasure's all mine, and I thank you very much for bringing me on and for reaching out.
Yeah.
If you didn't reach out, I wouldn't be here. So I'm crazy.
Never be afraid to ask, you guys. If you're passionate about something and you find that person, just ask, and you just never know what can happen afterwards. So talk to us about your story, Perry. Just I know that some of it is deep and dark, but people need to hear it, because then they need to know how you're helping. So please share that with us.
Of course. And it is those deep, dark details, rightly so. That's if it's like, if I can, I get this a lot when they're like, how can you speak about your story in that way? And I'm like, well, first of all, I didn't just jump out the sack talking about my story in that way, right? That's first of all. And second of all, it's to show other people that it's not your story and the details within it is not something that you need to be prisoner to, right? So for me, my story is I'm a Londoner. I come from people call it a broken home. So my mum left when I was 4. I have a great relationship with her now, and I make sure I always say that, because she's a diamond. But she left when I was 4, and it was just me and my dad for a few years. Then my stepmom came into the picture, and she moved in, and then it was my stepmom and it was my dad who raised me. Now, so my dad's mum, my nan, she had a husband, right, who was technically my step-granddad. He wasn't blood, it was her husband. And they would live about a 15-minute journey from where I grew up. Now, I used to go around there regularly because, well, one, my dad wanted me to have a relationship with his mum, my nan. She was amazing. And I was a proper nanny's boy. So I'd go around there quite frequently, a couple times a month maybe. And then it started roughly when I was 10 years old. So my step-granddad would sexually abuse me. It happened for about a year and a half. He would grope me. He might stroke my face. He'd put his hands down my pants, whether there's people in the room or people not in the room. He used to have that thrill of getting caught. He never got caught, really. He did get caught, but I will share that in a second. He would either whisper in my ear. There's just different things. He never raped me. As far as I'm aware, he hasn't raped anybody, but I could be wrong. But as far as I'm aware, it was just more so groping and more so his actions that kind of, you know, that he'd done for a while. And when I was about 11 and a half, there was an incident where there was a couple of us in the living room at my nan's house. I was sitting on my step granddad's lap and we was watching TV, and he put his hands down my trousers, which he would do fairly frequently. But this time my stepmom caught it. And because he had his arm over the sofa, and he used to smoke roll up cigarettes, and the cigarette fell out of his hand, went onto the carpet. My stepmom just thought, you know, he would lean over and pick it up. He didn't. Started to burn a hole through the carpet. And then she saw what he was doing. And then she dragged me out. I got back home. She ended up telling my dad, and my dad questioned me. And then I told him about what he was doing. And then from there, he then said to me, basically, you need to keep it a secret, because don't tell people. Don't go to school and start telling people. Don't go and start telling family members, because we don't want a black cloud over the family. We don't want people to think power family. Sexual abuse, you know, keep it under the rug. And at that age, I was 11, nearly 12. It was okay. Because the thing with, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate to this, who's not everyone, but a lot of people will be able to relate, who's had experience of abuse, especially within a family, is that I didn't know what he was doing was wrong, right? Especially when I was 10 years old, sexual abuse wasn't a big thing. I didn't even know what sexual abuse was. Sure, one, I lacked the emotional maturity. I think, I don't know, I can have an assumption that a lot more 10-year-olds in today's day and age know what sexual abuse is compared to a lot of 10-year-olds 16, 17 years ago. It wasn't on the news. It wasn't in the newspapers. And I thought that my step-granddad was just showing me a type of love that, well, yeah, it was a bit unusual, but he wouldn't do anything wrong because he's my granddad. So I stayed with that. So basically, like when I was like, I don't know, 12 to 16, those 4 years, it wasn't really an issue. One, because I lacked the emotional maturity to really know what was going, like what happened. And two, because I just hung out with my mates, didn't really think about it. It was when I grew older and it started to become more apparent in the news. And then I was forced to confront the story because it was more and more people were speaking up about it. And then it was when I was about 16, 17. I moved from London, moved to a new area with my parents because my nan passed away. They sold their house. So we moved to a new area. And I remember making a decision that because in London, I was a virgin. I wasn't good with the girls. I wasn't a lad with the guys. I wasn't popular. I was introverted and I wasn't confident. Now, that's okay for some people. They might like to be introverted. They might like that, you know, they're not overly confident. But for me, I didn't want that. I didn't want that to be the case. I didn't want that to be my identity. And I wanted to shed the identity of this boy who's been abused by his step-granddad. So when I moved to this new location, I'm an actor, right? That's what I do. So I created a character. And I was like, right, when I move to this new location and go to the new college, no one's going to know me. So I'm going to be the guy who's a lad, like somebody from American Pie. He's slept with loads of girls. He's popular. He's extroverted. He's the life of the party. And I became that person and I faked it until I made it. And I came to a point where all those lies became true. And some of it is great because, you know, I wanted that extra confidence. So some of those are skills that I wanted to keep. But then it got to a point where Lewis Howes brought out a book called Mask and Masculinity. And he talked about having the alpha mask and a womanizer mask. And I can't remember all the names of the masks, but he talked about having these masks. And it was when I realized how what I've been doing, there was a label for it, right? It was called something. It was called having a mask. It was called running away from something that you should be confronting, you should be facing, not creating these new people, these new personas, right? Because all you're doing is you're masking away that person that you need to actually own, that vulnerable side of you, the inner child. So when I saw that, I confronted my story, told my girlfriend at the time. And then, so that was the first time I broke my silence. I basically said to her, I was like, listen, I said, you know that guy who you started dating? I said, I wasn't that guy. I wasn't that guy who slept around. I wasn't that guy who was this overly confident guy. That was a lie. That was a character I made. And then I told her about the abuse. And then from there, I told four more people a few months later. And then what really, really made me break my silence on a scale, i.e. onto Facebook and then onto TikTok, was because, so in 2014, my dad became an alcoholic, right? Me and my dad were best friends. And he became an alcoholic. And it just got worse and got worse and got worse. And it's like, you know, if you flick that first domino, the other domino start falling. So he became an alcoholic. Then he became quite negative mindset. He stopped eating food. He wouldn't exercise. And then he became a diabetic in January. Then June 1st, 2017, paramedics got called van to the house because his blood sugar levels were off and they had to take him down to the hospital. And then he was in the back of the ambulance van. He had a heart attack in the back of the ambulance van, didn't make it to the hospital. And he was 48 years old. He was young soul. And I wanted to figure out why on earth did he become an alcoholic? You're not born a racist. You're not born wanting to molest children. You're not born an alcoholic. It's a coping mechanism for something, for a wound that hasn't been healed, right? And what was that wound? I messaged him a week before he passed away and I said, "Why are you drinking so much, Dad?" And he said this to keep away the demons. And I remember, I was like, what demons is he talking about? I had no idea what he was going through. So what demons is he talking? Is he trying to get attention? And then once I shared my story on Facebook, then everybody knew what my story. I remember my stepmom was like, "I didn't know it went on for longer than that one time that I caught." So what, because I don't remember going back and telling my dad what happened. So obviously what happened was I told them that that time that it happened was the only time it happened. I never told them about the year and a half prior to that, right? And I think because I knew obviously it was wrong, I didn't want to give them more ammunition against my step granddad. So I was saving him because I loved him, right? And I didn't want him to get into more trouble. So I never told him about that. And so yes, and then when I went round to a family member's house, I then, because I broke my silence, I then find out that it was me, it was my cousin, it was another family member, and it was also my dad that were victims of sexual abuse from the same man. And my dad kept it quiet. That's why he turned to alcohol. That's why he said about fighting away the demons. And that's why, so he lived and he died in silence, and it was a silence that killed him. And I'm adamant that that is it to this day. So that's a strong point behind my message, is that it's helping people break their silence so they don't go down the same road that my dad went down, and they don't go down the same road that my step granddad went down, because I also found out that he grew up. There's a film called Spotlight. Have you seen it, Annette?
I have not.
Have you heard of it?
I haven't.
It's crazy because it won like Best Picture, it won Oscars in 2015, and not many people have heard of it. It's crazy. So Spotlight is about a team of journalists in Boston. I can't remember what year, like 60s, 70s, quite a while ago. And they get whiff of a case of a priest molesting a Catholic church priest molesting a child. But people didn't want to dive into that story. You know, they didn't want to dive into it because it's a man of God. You know, he's not going to do anything. And back then, that's one thing. And then it's sexual abuse, really taboo. So they weren't going to go into it. Then this really brave team, the true story, really brave team of journalists dive into it. And it's not just one priest molesting one child, it's a whole underground of priests all over the world, right? Molesting children or in the Catholic Church system. Now, at the end of the film, before the credits come up, there's a list of Catholic churches around the world that have had like real documented cases of the priests molesting the children. And 2016, so a year before my dad passed away, he told me to watch the film. I watched it. Then he said to me, "Have you seen that?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, you know, at the end of the film, before the credits, there are institutions that come up, like churches that come up." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, the school that your granddad was raised in is listed at the end of the film." So I found out that my step granddad, along with his brother, grew up in a Catholic church in a boarding school in Ireland, and they were abused by the priest there. So my step granddad never got the support that he wanted. You know, he never reached out, he never asked for help. He stayed in silence, and what he'd done is he inflicted that pain that was inflicted onto him, onto other people. My dad inflicted the pain that was inflicted onto him, onto himself. And I wanted to break that generational cycle by breaking the silence and helping other people do the same thing.
Oh my gosh. I'm speechless about that because I'm just glad to hear that you are here now trying to break it. Like, it's going to stop here. And you are going to share your part so that you can help other people. How did your family feel when you started to talk about
They weren't the greatest fans.
it?
They weren't the but
No.
if I had to just summarize it in just in just that.
Well, I want to say it's obvious, but I mean, how did you start to second guess yourself? Like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have said anything. How did that make you feel?
No, I didn't. I never crossed the should I have done it because I know my family aren't too pleased. Now I'm gonna sound, can you swear on this or not? Yeah. I'm gonna sound like an arsehole when I say this and selfish. But I, to an extent, I care about what my family think, right? Like, I want them to root for me in the corner. But when it comes to someone that I don't agree with, I don't give a shit. And I never have done, though. I never, and my, if my stepmom, she wouldn't like me saying this, but she'd like, yep, yeah, it's true. My dad, when I was growing up, my dad, this is the reason me and my dad used to butt heads all the time. Because growing up, my dad parented me in a way that he wished he was parented by his mum and his stepdad, right? So they were alcoholics. They'll always be in the pub all day, every day. When they come home, they expected a cooked meal from my dad, and he had to have cleaned the house. That was his role, but he never got any type of love from them. And if my dad didn't rock up at home for a week, they wouldn't care where he was. They were just, where's our food, right? So me growing up, if I wanted to go out to a friend's house, what's their name? What's their address? What time are you getting there? Okay, I want you back by this time. If you're a minute late, you're grounded. And if I was a minute late, right, I remember there'd be times where I'd be scared to put my key in the front door because I knew he would blow his lid, right? And then as soon as I was 19, I went to university, not to study, so I can get out. I was like, I'm spreading my wings. So with my dad, he always has something to say about what I was doing, right? And it really used to affect him when I did not give a shit about what he was saying. My stepmom, she learned a long time ago to just let him do what he wants to do because it's going to save me a lot of stress and anxiety, right? Just, I trust Perry, he will just do what he wants to do. And that's it. So when it came to the story, they weren't particularly happy, but from the point of, but it's changed, by the way, right? When I first came out of it, because I never saw the impact, they just saw it as Perry sharing. Perry, why do you need to share it? Like, I understand, but like, just keep it at home, dude. Like, we don't, no, everybody doesn't need to know, because in their head, it's like, if you're sharing your story, I'm included because I'm part of the family. So you're sharing my story too, right? And then, sure, there was times I was like, oh, okay, maybe I can. There was never a, I'm not gonna carry on sharing. It, the extent of it was, okay, how can I not name names or not name family like member position so it doesn't like bring them into the story? But I was always, I didn't care. I'm sharing my story because is when I got that one message, and this is when it all changed. Is when I did that Facebook video because I was sharing my story for me, right? To me, for me, break my silence. Did it for me. Didn't care about anybody else. Then I got the response. Somebody messaged me, and he was like, "I'm in America right now." And I knew of him, but we hadn't really talked before. And he's an American. He's a marketer, and he went through something similar. And he left his family. He's on the other side of America, and they basically wanted him to come back because there was a death in the family and he didn't want to, but it was the abuse that was really sending him down a dark path. And watching my video allowed him, gave him permission to come out and share his story. And now, like, I follow him, we talk, like, he is winning. I'm talking, he is slaying it in the marketing world. And his name is getting a lot bigger. And when I saw that outcome, I was like, I'm done. I am set for the rest of my life. I'm doing this in different ways, but I'm helping people break their silence too. So I've had my different set of, like, for example, to begin with their reaction is different to the book. Like, they've had their own things, just don't mention us, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And that's okay because it's my story, it's not theirs.
I'm so glad that you said that because when I I just started talking about my story, a couple years ago, and now, my book is coming out, and I had the same thing. People were worried because they were connected with me in a way, so I had to figure out how to share it without sharing them, and it's just such a
The minefield, isn't it, sometimes?
it is. But then again, I was like, okay, but this is what saved me. Like, I wouldn't be here if I didn't share my story and all that. So it was difficult. I lost friends because I didn't understand how to react when I started sharing. Did you go through that? Did you start losing people because they just didn't know how to treat you anymore?
What I do think helped is, I reckon my answer to that would be yes if I didn't take this road. So I'm in touch with, I think, one friend from school, I think two people from college, but I don't talk to them that much. Because I got into entrepreneurship when I was 19, right? And the first year of getting into entrepreneurship was cutting the people who don't serve you, right? Taking the emotions out, cutting the people that don't serve you, and then just bringing around you, right? And you get to, like, when you're going through school and your ego is really high, you want loads of friends, right? Which is your ego, and also a bunch of insecurities too, because you're afraid to be alone, right? And then when I got into entrepreneurship, it was like, first of all, you don't need a fraction, like more than a fraction of all of those. Guaranteed, you can have five of your closest people around you and you're set. Right. Sure, you can have people outside of that. You can have a bunch of friends, and the relationships between all of those will differ in their own way. But just having those really close-knit of people. So when I was 19, 20, I cut out everyone, and I have the same people, which is like, it's a handful of my close boys, my close guys and girls that have been with me since I was the age of like 20. So. And in regards to my Facebook audience and all that sort of stuff, I did the same thing because I got into marketing when I was 20. So I was like, right, my Facebook audience, my Instagram audience are not going to be the people with the mindsets that are quite fixed and oh, you don't want to be sharing that. They're gone. They're dust. It's a fart in the wind, right? I'm going to have personal development, strong-minded people. So when it came round to me sharing my story 4 years ago, I was fortunate enough to have an audience that would be warm and welcoming, because they'd all, not all, but most of them aren't like, they read books or they know who Tony Robbins is, or like at least a base level of what personal development is. So when it came to me sharing my story, they was very open and honest and welcoming about it.
That's really no, I love how you explain that, how you went into continuing to do what you love despite what people may think. 'Cause I think that's what's important is you don't need to have 100 friends. Your 100 followers, your 1,000 followers, they aren't your friends. They're following you, but you're making an impact, which I think is important too. So it's such a hard thing these days to figure out followers from friends and all that. So you wrote a book, and tell us about that.
Yeah, so the book, I've called it if we're going to talk marketing, I've called it step two of the three-step process, right? Because when I broke my silence and then I took to TikTok and then I blew up on TikTok, I was like, I need to find a way to funnel these kids and stuff. And that's when I joined forces with Juliet and done the charity. And then it must have been a few months later, I was three episodes into the Jeffrey Epstein documentary on Netflix. And gave me the message, dude, what are you doing? These girls are crying on the screen because they couldn't break their silence because they were overpowered by this billionaire, well-connected man. These girls were a speck, a little bit of dirt, right? In the whole world that was Jeffrey Epstein. They meant nothing. So if they're going to speak out, nobody's going to believe him. His money can shut them up, so things like that. And to me, it was like, dude, you need to write this book. You've been wanting to write the book, but it was, I think, I don't know why I hadn't. I actually don't know. Maybe it's just the wrong timing. But I just hadn't done it yet. And then that was really a kick up the ass to get it done. So then I wrote the book, probably in about a month, I think it was. I wrote a book, and but then I sat on it for about a year, because when I wrote the book with with like a vision of exactly how it's. I'm very like vision orientated. So for example, with the movie that I'm working on, I know exactly how it's going to be. I know the impact it's going to create. I know the festivals it's going to be at, and I see it being pitched at the Oscars, and I see that, and it's going to happen because I'm unavailable for any other option. It's not going to happen. It's a fact. Yeah, it's done. I've already. It's like, it's done. So with the book, I had a vision for it, and because I couldn't make that vision happen, I sat on the book. That's how stubborn I am, right? So I in March, I left my old business behind with my partner and business partner, and I freed up a lot of space to pursue acting, and which then allowed me the space and then focus on the book. But I didn't have money, right? And I knew that I needed about 5 grand to one side to pay for a book design editor, to pay for an edit a book design artist, sorry, and then a book editor and all that malarkey. And I needed about 5 grand. I didn't have 5 grand. I was like, okay, well, I'll sit on a book until I have it. A year goes by. I'm like, what are you doing? I said, like, you believe so much in the universe. So if you pub self-publish this book and you just do it on your own, you create the cover in Canva, right?
Oh, yeah.
You just put the whole book through Grammarly and you just keep on reading through it. And if there's spelling mistakes, who gives a fuck, right? Because it's not about that. Those are small little things that can get changed. You believe in the universe. So if you put this book out self-published and it's meant to be, it will blow up. If it's not meant to be, it won't. And then you'd be like, okay, cool, I've tried it. It needs to be published. So I just done it. Within 48 hours, I stayed up. I designed the book in Canva, right? I had gone through it a couple more times, put it onto Amazon within 48 hours. And then 48 hours later, it went to number one on Amazon in the mental health and the sexual abuse category in the UK and the US. And now we're about 4 weeks later. I've done just over 550 copies, and that's just me. And now, it's all blown up with press. An article just went live today, which is Core Journalist sent it over, and it's just blown. And now the book is going to be turned into a movie, which I'm working on a script now, and I've got to get it done by May. And a TEDx talk has been booked in for next month. So, and this has all come from the book. It's all come from me letting go and giving myself over to the universe to allow to happen what's meant to happen.
That's incredible. It can happen. So if you're watching or you're listening to this, what's stopping you? Because I think that's what it is. It's fear or self-doubt or whatever. Just do it. Canva's awesome. I just upgraded.
Yeah.
Canva's like the freaking best.
Yeah,
Thank you for doing all that. That I can't wait to see what you do next. That is ridiculous. It's amazing. How did you meet Juliet and how did you get involved with We Rescue Kids? Tell us about that because that's a whole other much needed discussion.
so. Me and Juliet had been connected for a while. I knew her through business. Like I said, I've been in entrepreneurship for a while. So I just knew her through business way before I even knew her story, and she knew mine. Then one day she saw a post of mine, and then she messaged me. She was like, dude, we need to get on a call because I think our stories are very similar. So we done that. And then it was just a comment was just thrown in the air, like, we need to do something to help kids. Yeah, we do, we do, we do. A year would go by. Same thing, right? And it was like that for maybe 2 or 3 years, I think. That could be a bit long. It was roughly a couple of years. And then I knew, like, she had told me that she had already gotten the ball rolling on a charity. It was very early days, and it's a lot of work, and she's just sitting, well, not sitting with the idea, because she'd already been putting things into practice and been doing a lot of work on her part. She's an awesome woman. But she's like, how can like can we like should we join forces? Like, come on board, and we can co-run this charity, co-found this charity together. And at that time, that's when TikTok blew up, and all these kids were coming through the DMs, and me and her would get onto calls, and I'll tell her about these messages from these kids. And then that's when we decided to join forces. So it's me, Juliet, and it's Samuel Young, running this charity, and it's awesome. So we've been live about a year and a half, I think it is now, and it's a lot of work. I'll tell you what, the people who's try to set up a charity, like, it's Jesus, it's not. It's a lot of work. It's a waiting game. Like, we still haven't gotten nonprofit status yet. Now, we should have gotten that just before the lockdown happened last year, but because of the pandemic, it's backlogged new and upcoming charities to get it. So we're legal, we're taking donations and stuff like that, but we just haven't been greenlit on a non-profit status yet. But so which means that we should have had like a safe home open already, but that's been delayed. So we're hoping for it to be towards the end of this year, have our first safe home open in the States. We've already got kids waiting in the foster care system to come through into our safe home, which is awesome.
Oh my gosh.
So what we've done is we've pivoted. And last Monday, we started a campaign. And what you can do is you could sponsor a child, right? So kind of like how you can sponsor an animal in the wild. You know, that's type of concept. Here you can sponsor a child. And what you're doing for this child who is a victim of sexual abuse is for your monthly donation, you are paying for that child to have therapy every single month for 12 months with one of our child therapists, specialists that work on behalf of the charity. And you'll get updates about the child that you've sponsored and about how they're healing and recovering from what they've gone through.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Can you tell them a little bit about what We Rescue Kids is about? It's for those that are sexually abused. I thought there was more than that, but could you explain a little bit more?
Sure. It's about rescuing and rehabilitating kids from sexual abuse and from sex trafficking. So we have a big vision for the charity, and that is having a boots on the ground team within us. So we would have intel when there's, for example, a ring of 14 kids, you know, being trafficked from the States to Mexico, and we would find out about that, and then we'll send our team out to rescue those kids, lock up the leaders, the ringleaders, and then with those kids, we would then put them into our safe homes. Nobody would know the locations. Even, you know, it's going to be very close knit, and so that's going to be like one element. And then the other element will be having just this real close knit support system that not just a 22-year-old can come to us. Who's been abused and they want healing and they want rehabilitation, but also that 9-year-old child who's living at home with her dad who abuses her. And there's a way for that person to contact us. Like, we really want to position this charity as like an older brother or an older sister to the child, you know, because we find that with a lot of charities it's a charity is very business. It looks like a business. A 9-year-old child can't relate to a business. So they probably don't even know what a business is, right?
Yeah.
So we really want to be like, hey, you know, and that's why I blew up on TikTok, because I was Perry Powell, I was the older brother, you know, in their eyes to the 12-year-olds and the 5-year-olds and the 18-year-olds. Oh, hey, I thought I was going through this alone, but Perry, you're on TikTok sharing your story. That means I could probably reach out to you and tell you with what I'm going through. And
wow.
Just a daily thing, and it's just growing.
That's incredible. What's something that you want, that you would leave to our listeners that are going through similar situations? What is something that you would like to tell them?
I would speak on something which some people would really be able to relate to. Some people would find it very, very hard to listen to, but there's a reason. And I put my neck out there and talk about this because there's a reason that I do. So to give a little bit of context, my book, Breaking the Silence, is split into three parts. The first part is my story, breaking my abuse. Part two of the book, there's 14 stories in there from 14 survivors of sexual abuse. The first half are named, the second half are unnamed. Then you have a page at the end of part two of the book that says your story. So the person who's reading the book and they're living in silence, when they're ready, grab a pen, write in the book their story, and they become the 15th survivor of sexual abuse, and they're inside that book. And then part three of the book is about your story, i.e. the reader, about the steps that they can take to break their silence. So there's two things. There's like multiple things. I've got the book next to me. It's like, you know, owning your story, forgiveness, letting go, masculinity for the men, self-love. Well, not just the men, women to read as well, to know about the men around them and to understand how to, you know, maybe communicate and understand, shifting your identity and ways to break your silence. So the two that I quickly will go over is the forgiveness and the ways to break your silence. Now, the ways to break your silence, I said it first because it's quicker to get out of the way. So I shared my story verbally. And a lot of people, when they listen to me, they're like, oh, well, breaking my silence, I would be under the assumption that is to get a video out onto Facebook like Perry did, or tell his partner like Perry did. And that's not the case, because verbal, breaking the silence, you know, doing it verbally is just one form of communication, right? One form of communication. And that's not the only way. Like I talk about in the book, there's so many different ways to break your silence. It's all about flicking at one domino and just letting it ripple down. And it's like, you know, there's paintings out there with like paint splattered on it, right? Some people will be like, is this even art? What is this? Just paint splattered on a canvas. How do you not know that the artist who painted that, that's 10 years worth of silence that she is just broken, or he is just broken by putting that paint. They put that paint onto that canvas in a specific way, because that's their emotions on that canvas. That's them breaking their silence. Writing in a journal, saying it in front of the mirror. There are ways to break your silence just to you, because that's all that matters right now, right? Yeah. And then 5 steps down the line, 10 steps, 20 steps, 50 steps down the line, then that can be telling your partner. Then that can be telling your family. Then that can be telling the therapist, or telling the world if you want to, writing it in the book. But it doesn't have to come as the first step, and I want to make that very clear. Now, the second thing is forgiveness. I'm very, very big on forgiveness. In the same light, I make sure that I don't want it to come across like I'm enforcing forgiveness onto you, because everybody has their own story, right? And some people might not be in a place to forgive right now, and that's okay. The bare minimum that I'm asking is to acknowledge that it is an option. Whether you want to visit that now, visit it later, or never visit it, just acknowledge that it's an option. For me, the way that I got through it is through forgiving myself for not speaking out. You know, when I was living in silence, I was like, was I just a sick kid? Did I enjoy it? I must have enjoyed it, because I went through it for a year and a half and I didn't speak out, you know? And that's just this inner dialogue that we're prisoner to. That's saying those questions, and I blame myself. But with forgiveness, I worked on forgiving myself, and then with my step-granddad, I chose to forgive him. Now, the reason why I chose to forgive him is because it's got nothing to do with him. Forgiving him has absolutely zero to do with him, right? I'm not giving him a get-out-of-jail-free card. I'm not letting him off the hook. I'm forgiving him for me, because I'm too special, I'm too powerful, beautiful, and courageous of a human being to still be tied back by that person's chains, right? He died 2 years after the sexual abuse stopped, and I was still held back by him. Explain that one. He's 6 feet in the ground, right? Mm-hmm. So sure, I can forgive myself and I can move forward, but if I see a picture of him, somebody brings up his name, I'm still going to feel resentment. I'm still going to feel hate. I'm still going to feel pain, because I haven't forgiven him, right? I'm like, no, I haven't forgiven him. But see, like, even my face is scrunched up there. You know, there's pain there. There's emotion there. I didn't want that, because he didn't deserve that from me. Yeah. So I worked on forgiving him. Now, the way that people are like, oh, okay, well, you can just say, yeah, I worked on forgiving him. How did you do it? For me, and again, this is, I can just speak from my experience. And for me, it was finding awareness on his story. So earlier I mentioned about him with the Spotlight film and stuff like that, but that's only because I was asking questions, right? I asked questions about his schooling experience. I asked questions about, did he speak out? Because I truly wanted to know where he came from. Everybody has a story. Take the emotions out for a second. Everybody has a story. I just wanted to know why he'd done what he'd done to us. When I was able to gain the understanding and the awareness on his story, that allowed me better to forgive him. If he was alive today, I would sit down with a coffee with him. I'd probably have put him in the book, you know, and I think it'd be a valuable side of the story, having his story in there. You know, I probably would have done that.
Yeah.
And that's because of forgiveness. So that's what I would say to a lot of people. And also therapy as well. I say that all the time. I think everybody on this planet should have a therapist. Everybody, you know, it's a stigma around that. I was on radio 2 weeks ago. I was on a radio. She's a therapist on the radio. And I was like, you know, every single person on this planet should have a therapist. It's a stigma around therapy that people don't vibe with. You know, you're somewhere, oh yeah, I go to therapy every week. Oh, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? You're okay? Right. Yeah? No, there's nothing wrong with me, right? I just want to just chat to somebody, because, like, everything doesn't need to be a problem. It doesn't need to be a reason, right? Therapy can just be not only heal wounds that you never knew you had, not only open doors that you never knew existed, but it's just good for the soul. So, and I make sure that I don't position myself as a therapist. I don't position myself as a counselor. I'm not here to help people with healing. I just help people with breaking their silence and then allowing them to bring themselves to get that therapist.
Thank you for saying that. There is such a huge stigma. Everybody needs a therapist. Every coach has a coach. I mean, there's just like so many things that go on behind the scenes that nobody knows about. There's nothing wrong with it. And I think that's one of the most important things to tell even our kids. I have an 18 to 20-year-old, and I want them to know it's okay to have feelings. It's okay to talk about your feelings. It's okay to see a therapist. There's nothing wrong with it. And I think that's one of the misguided truths out there is nobody really talks about it because they're like, oh, it's no one needs to know. Keep your business in house. It's much more than that. So yeah. So where can people you're on TikTok. People can find you on TikTok at what's
At
your
Perry Power.
at Perry Power.
Easy thing to remember.
And Instagram, same thing, and Facebook, and all those.
Well, on Instagram, I got to make more of a statement, right? So my Instagram handle is I am Perry Power.
Well,
And
I think
Facebook because there's this other guy. He's a bastard. I've let him know that as well. He's got my name, and he lives in Essex, not too far away from me. He's an estate agent, and he's currently slaying the first page of Google. If you put into Google Perry Power, his face is all over it. And I'm like, dude, you watch when I blow up in acting, right? And I get a bigger profile, I will jump on page one of Google. I'm telling you this right now. So on Facebook, unfortunately, it's not Perry Power because he has that. So on Facebook, it's Perry. Dot W dot power because my middle name is William, and what's short for William? What's short for William now? And that,
Bill.
sorry,
Bill.
what
Bill.
bit? Wait,
Oh.
people say that.
I
That's
don't know.
Bill, Will. Well, you got Will, right?
Will.
And you got Perry Willpower. So, see,
Very
I reckon
cool.
my dad planned all this. My dad planned it all. I reckon before I was born, he's like, it needs to be something one day, or this is gonna be an absolute waste. So that's what I'm trying to do.
it. Okay. Do you have a website or is this the best places to find you?
No, other than a charity website, I do have so perrypower.org. I literally, as we speak, every single day, I'm slowly working on our website, so it should be live within the next couple of weeks. But
Okay,
not right
that's
now.
wonderful. And we can find your book on Amazon and everywhere.
Well, most Amazons you can,
Okay.
because like somebody messaged me who's in Denmark. Apparently, Amazon don't have a delivery service in Denmark, which I was like,
Oh,
whoa, yeah,
what?
he couldn't get my
Weird.
book, so but he can't get anything. So I was like, okay, so yes, but in answer to your question, on the majority of countries on your Amazon, if you put in "Breaking the Silence" in the search bar, I'll be on most of them. I'll be the first one,
Okay.
which is great. It's just testament to how much people are searching on Amazon and buying it and leaving reviews, which is amazing.
Oh, that is so amazing. God bless you for still being here, for doing everything you're doing. That's just like, we need more people like you to break that silence. So thank you so much for responding to my comments on Instagram. It's like
Anytime.
you're all famous and I can't wait to see your movie and everything that you do. So keep us updated. I'm sure you will. And we'll just go and find you and follow you and just send you nothing but positivity. So
You got such a big heart. I love it, Annette. Thank you.
thank you so much, Perry. I appreciate you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Truths We Hide podcast, created and founded by your host, Annette, the founder of A Wild Ride Call Life. Also, a big thank you to all of our sponsors for each and every episode that is aired. We have so much support from them and all of our listeners. You can find more information at www.awildridecalllife.com.